For Ave Maria Radio, I'm Paul Kengor. Check out my book, Takedown, on the sabotaging of family and marriage.
This is full-time Catholic radio for Southeast Michigan, 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the Internet at WDEO.net.
My guest today is coming back on Church and Culture after a short hiatus. It's Father Philip DeVue, who is the pastor of St. Joseph Parish in Crescent Springs, Kentucky, Diocese of Covington, just across from Cincinnati, Ohio. Been a priest for over 12 years. I've known him for about maybe over half of that time. Graduated from the Pontifical College Josephinum and St. Louis University. He serves on the board of Sacred Heart Radio in Cincinnati and is a commentator on church affairs on the Sunrise Morning Show. He gives retreats throughout the United States and serves as an adjunct scholar of public policy at the Acton Institute in Grand Rapids. Father DeVue, how did you feel about the Tim Kaine, Mike Pence debate of a few days ago?
Well, I felt in one sense that it was fairly predictable. I mean, Senator Kaine was articulating the same things that he always does, that standard nonsense line, saying I'm a Catholic, but then peddling the fact that he's sort of personally against abortion, whatever that means.
By the way, but in what respect do we have any evidence that he's personally against it? Do we have any?
Well, you know, Dale, in preparing for this show, I tried to take the senator at his word that in some way he was personally opposed to abortion. Did a search. I spent about 2 hours looking for various things, and I found, I'm not a detective, but I found zero evidence that, other than he says that he's personally opposed to abortion. His entire public record indicates quite the opposite. And I was delighted when Governor Pence, who I wish was still Catholic,
right?
I was delighted whenever he actually brought the issue up as a compelling issue that reminds us of the real foundation of one's viewpoint about the world, about public policy, and about the future of the country. So I was delighted that the governor raised it as a substantive point of his political viewpoint and the agenda that, you know, he would have if he were vice president of the United States.
Father, in my memory of all the presidential and vice presidential debates I've ever watched, I don't think I've ever heard as strong and eloquent a defense of innocent life as Mike Pence did the other night.
I can't recall one either, Deal. And the fact that he was strong and eloquent about it, and the fact that it's obviously a centerpiece of his policy worldview, and he brought it up in such an effective way, I think was extraordinary. You know, every one of these folks usually gives the impression of wanting to run away. You know,
exactly.
And it's related realities. So I thought it was refreshing and delightful, you know.
I remember when he was announced, I got an immediate message from Marjorie Dannenfeldter, head of the SBA list, who was thrilled beyond belief. And coming from Marjorie, that was important. And as it turns out, Donald Trump has certainly buttressed his pro-life claims by having Mike Pence on his side.
Well, you know, Dale, I've given some thoughts about, the pro-life reality as it relates to the Trump-Pence ticket, and I hope I'm not stepping afoul of anything if I share
that. Oh, speak your mind.
It has occurred to me something that is interesting and dynamic in this campaign is, and I think I have shared with you, and you know that I've had reservations.
Sure.
About Mr. Trump's candidacy, as have many others. But it occurs to me there's something that Mr. Trump and Governor Pence have done that has never been done before, that is eventually what made me less concerned about, especially about this issue, which is most important to me as a Catholic priest and as a human being first. And that is that in the past, candidates who ran for president, who the Republican Party nominated, truth be told, I think most of them were probably, at least in a soft way, pro-choice. But they asked us to believe some sort of election year conversion story. And, you know, we went along with it, and they gave us some indications that that would be the case. Okay, fair enough. Politics is a rough business, you know, a lot of prudence involved, et cetera. But, of course, Governor Pence's convictions and leadership on this matter is, you know, as sterling as it gets. But, you know, Mr. Trump came along and said, you know what, I'm not going to ask you to believe me. Here are the people I'm talking to. Here are the judges I'm interested in. And here are the people to give me advice on these matters. You don't have to believe me. Here's who I'm talking to.
Right.
And then, of course, he announced a very solid group of Catholic advisors who have very strong, the strongest expertise and credentials in this. And you know what? In the way Mr. Trump constructs himself, he offered us a deal. And on that issue, it's the best deal we've ever gotten, especially because Governor Pence is there. Mm-hmm. We don't have to believe him. We know what he's put on the table for this matter. And I think it's remarkable that this campaign that I would have fought in a million years would not have had any sort of pro-life, push to it, has had some of the most pro-life, biggest push we've seen in ages as a positive part of the campaign's agenda. That's remarkable, I think. I would not have predicted that at the outset of this.
I think a lot of people have been surprised, and I was very pleased with his video message on the canonization of St. Mother Teresa. Very pleased with his Catholic committee, which I sort of had a hand in. And his pro-life committee is very strong, too.
Yeah, I mean, they're all people of sterling credential. I don't know that you could get a group of advisors on those issues that are better than the ones that you have. And as I said, that's married to the fact that, you know, Governor Pence is on the ticket, and, he certainly understands this issue as non-negotiable. For a safe, prosperous, and free America, he sees the right to life as fundamental to achieving that vision in all the ways that can and will be have to labor to be achieved.
Mm-hmm.
So I just never would have predicted that if he asked.
So we have a liberal Protestant who, you know, has not lived an exemplary moral life, and doesn't claim to have. We have this ex-Irish Catholic turned evangelical, had a born-again experience in college. Who is solidly Christian,
right.
And we have a self-professed Methodist. No, she is a Methodist. Hillary Clinton is a Methodist, says it's important to her.
Yeah,
and we have this Catholic who, you know, in all the years he's served in public office, never been subject to Canon 915. Do you want to remind our listeners what Canon 915 is?
Sure. Well, Canon 19 is one of the canons of the Code of Canon Law, which governs, you know, the life of the church. It lays out for us the discipline of the church. And Canon 915 makes it very clear that, you know, those who obstinately persevere in public, manifest, grave sin, and certainly supporting and enabling the killing of the innocent unborn is a grave, grave sin. And it says that if they persist in that after they have, you know, been told what the correct path to communion and reconciliation with the church is, if they don't follow that path, then they should be denied Holy Communion. And, you know, our own American Cardinal Raymond Burke wrote
yes.
And preached very eloquently on this subject, and Cardinal Ratzinger as head of the prefect of the congregation.
And the former bishop of Corpus Christi, Gracida, one of the great
yes.
bishop, yes.
Exactly. Acted very forcefully in that matter. But unfortunately, that has been a minority position.
Now, Bishop Tobin, I think, warned Tim Kaine not to come to Delaware, right?
Yes, Bishop Tobin did explicitly say that, yes. And, you know, I've known Bishop Tobin a long time, not well. But I have to say, his courageous leadership of the Providence Diocese is a real blessing
yeah.
to the Church in America.
And given that Providence is a hugely Catholic, Rhode Island, I'm sorry, is a hugely Catholic state, something like 80%. It always votes solid Democrat and pro-abort. There he is. You know, he was the first one to raise protests about Tim Kaine. He's continued to. He's made a statement after the debate on his Facebook page. If you ever talk to him again, give him my personal thanks. This takes a lot of guts to do what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure he locks his door at night.
I mean, in a bastion of a Catholic Democrat state of Rhode Island, and I know a former Speaker of the House, longtime Speaker of the House of Rhode Island. He tells me it's just absolutely corrupt beyond belief.
Yeah, I think that's exactly correct. And here comes Bishop Tobin. You know, I mean, actually speaking, what shouldn't be surprising to anyone, but Catholic prelates have sort of punted on this issue for so long, I guess. You know, a bishop coming along and speaking so clearly is a shock to everyone. But no, absolutely. I mean, it would be one thing if you were saying these things in Texas, right? It's another thing to be saying them. You know.
Well, we got it out of Denver yesterday.
Yes. But Archbishop Aquila's remark couldn't have been more clear and more proper in its direction. So I was delighted to read his column.
Father DeVoot, whenever I make this argument in a column or post something, I get this trickle of comments about the church can't endorse a candidate. And, of course, that's not what we're talking about.
Not at all.
When you look at Archbishop Aquila's statement, it's the best statement I've seen that sends a clear message about the priority of life in the election, doesn't have to name a candidate, but makes it perfectly clear this is a point of which there's no compromise. Other statements that we've talked about together and we've both written about have been convoluted and given Catholics an excuse to kind of just ignore the life issue, in my opinion.
Yes. I mean, so many of the statements come out, even some of them that are well-meaning, I suppose, seem to bury, the priority of the life issue, in a host of other issues, or bury it in the form of saying, well, we can't endorse a candidate, so we shy away from saying the priority. And, in this particular season, what I've seen a lot of deal, which disturbs me, is, we've noted Mr. Trump has not lived an exemplary life, and maybe we could all wish that there were certain ways he would interact in a more gentlemanly fashion, let me put it that way. But some of the clarity and the priority of the pro-life statement on the part of Catholics has been buried, I think, many times in this sort of focus on, Mr. Trump's sometimes very New York personality, if you will.
And I've lived and taught in New York for 5 years, and I understand it.
I do too. I mean, I have a lot of New Yorkers who are friends, and so I get it. And that has been discouraging to see it buried, especially because in the light of Senator Kaine, I mean, really and publicly and regularly trading on his Catholicism, especially among Catholic constituencies, to gain votes for a woman who has spent four decades advocating for the only principle and policy idea of her professional life that she has ever treated as a non-negotiable, and that is abortion on demand in every form at any time for any reason. In this situation where clarity really needed to be made known, we've had a lot of muddle, which I think has not been good for the pro-life witness of the church. As you say, no one is saying vote for this one or that one, but we are saying vote for this issue and apply this issue, to your intellect and to your voting will when you go to the booth, because we live in an imperfect world. We're always going to have to deal with imperfect candidates and people. That's the way it is. We're Catholics. I mean, ultimately, we stand for the kingdom. So only the kingdom is the kingdom, right?
Then someone might say, why not extend that forgiveness for imperfection to Tim Kaine?
Well, I could be willing to extend that forgiveness to him if he showed himself repentance on his lifelong political enabling of the killing of the innocent unborn. As we said, nothing about it shows that he is personally opposed to it. Nothing about it shows that he suffers any qualms of conscience, on this matter. And then he trades on his Catholicism, misrepresenting his Catholicism, misrepresenting the content of God's commandments for electoral gain. I mean, that's a depraved position that has to be corrected before it can be forgiven. I mean, that's the way I see it, anyway.
Now, when it comes to denying communion, Is that a recognition that someone is excommunicated de facto? I've never quite understood that.
Not necessarily, no. You know, there are different schools of thought on that, and I recall Cardinal Burke wrote an excellent essay on this a few years ago, and if my memory were better, I could tell you all that he said in it, but it's but it's not. No, you know, sometimes denying someone communion is what you might call a situational corrective and a call to conversion, right? So there are any number of reasons that someone might not be able to receive communion, right? As we know, so
it's not necessarily excommunicated.
You're not necessarily excommunicated if, for some reason, you have been told you are excluded from Holy Communion. It can lead to that, of course, if someone doesn't correct or they're doing, you know, persistent public harm to the faith and morals of the Church. But no, it is not necessarily a sign that they are excommunicated. It's that they are banned from receiving communion until something is corrected. And in this case, if one were to apply Canon 915 to Senator Kaine and other Catholic politicians who manifest in grave sin, as well as are manifestly persevering in leading others into grave sin by supporting and enabling the killing of the innocent unborn, you know, their role is a little different for them because they have public responsibilities. And so it's not just a matter of their private morality and their individual salvation. It's a matter of the public good. So, you know, some of them, if they persist in it, I think could fall under the censure of excommunication. They refused to in any way change their position.
Now, who is it up to? Who is it up to actually enact this?
In the normal course of things, it would be up to their, as it relates to excommunication, of course, that would be up to the bishop in the diocese in which they have their residence, to whom they're subject to, as a member of the faithful. Now, there are different understandings of how Canon 915 can be applied as a corrective to individual situations. Now, my read of Canon 915, and I do recall that Cardinal Burke's essay indicated this and supported this reading of it, is that even if a parish priest knew, like someone like Senator Kaine was coming to his church, he could indeed refuse him Holy Communion.
He could warn him in advance, even. You know,
he could warn him in advance and say, you know, delighted to have you here to pray. We're going to be praying for you and with you, but do not present yourself for Holy Communion, because if you do, I would have to refuse you, given your stance, your public stance, which corrupts the faith and morals of the faithful by supporting and enabling the killing of the innocent preborn.
Now, have you ever had that situation yourself, Father?
I have had it after the fact, Deal. There was a couple of... now, I should add that you politicos of that sort tend to avoid my church, so I don't get... because I'm kind of well-known for my my clear views on this, and, you know, as Reagan used to say, peace through strength. If you're strong, it's amazing how many fights you don't have to actually engage in. There's a corollary to that in the spiritual realm. I have only had it after the fact. I had a couple of, how shall we say, local politicos a few years ago whose views I did not know. I wasn't aware. And only later did I discover.
You let someone slip by on your watch?
It's a scandal, I know. I didn't know. I didn't know who they were. You know, there's so many politicos today, it's hard to keep up with how many there are. However, after the fact, at least with one of them, who was a regular here, I spoke to him about it privately, and I said, you know, wasn't aware of some controversy you were involved in. Here's a clear teaching of the Church. I would urge you, unless you correct that reality in as public a way as you can, but don't present yourself for communion. Now, the end result of that conversation is I never saw him again. So
how did he take it?
He was a little surprised, and I told him, I said, listen, I'm happy to help you if your position on this matter is one of just simply not understanding of how this applies to, you know, public life, how this applies. I said, then please, I am here to help you. My goal is to reconcile you to Christ and his teaching, not to, you know, leave you out in the dark. I said, so you have my entire attention, any resource I have, any time I can give. And I have to say, in that particular conversation, while he was a little flummoxed by being told this, To the extent one takes something like that, well, he took it pretty well, and he kind of said, well, I totally understand that. Father, I understand the position you're in, but you got to understand the position I'm in. And I said, well, the thing is, I do understand the position you're in, and you don't want to be in it. You need to get out of it. That's that's what you need to do.
I bet he didn't take that one very well.
He was a politician, so he let it slide, because obviously he didn't want this made public. So I understand he went somewhere else at that point. I still see him around town once in a while. He's very pleasant when he sees me. But he even kind of indicated, he says, well, I guess I didn't know that this is kind of what the church thought, but I, you know, of course he made the comment, which, you know, people have been deformed into thinking that, well, you know, I can't push my religion, you know, on the public order. And
he said,
well, only if you believe Thomas Jefferson was pushing religion on people when he talked about the right to life, liberty,
right,
and happiness. Do you believe that this is a religious issue?
I said, and ask him if he believes in slavery.
It's a human issue, and it's an issue of moral reason to which no one has to be a believer to understand and to grasp.
In your 12 years as a priest, and you've stayed around people you know because you grew up with them, have you seen any significant changes in the attitude toward abortion as an issue among Catholics?
I've seen two changes, Deal. On one segment of the population, I have perceived that they've gotten stronger than ever about being pro-life. And on another segment, I've seen the people have just kind of rather laissez-faire about it.
That's what Jacques Maritain describes as in his philosophy of history as progress along the line of both good and evil simultaneously.
I think that's exactly right. And however, I once again, now this is a feeling, I don't have demographic support for it, but, you know, I see the issue in many ways sliding out of, you know, our public consciousness in a way that makes me concerned. And I think the reason for that, Deal, is that as a sort of lifestyle, libertine lifestyle business has grown and people have become more and more secular, even Catholics becoming more and more secular, is that, you know, nobody wants to talk about abortion because it touches on convictions people have about, you know, their lifestyle. And, you know, you and I both know where the reality of abortion often comes up and touches people's lives. And it usually is related around some sort of lifestyle question,
right,
issue,
yes,
or failure. Or
you
failure.
See people changing their position on homosexuality when a family member comes out of the closet.
Sure, sure. And, you know, once again, I understand the human reaction to that, and I'm, you know, sympathetic with that. But, you know, we always, if we really love people, we have to love them enough to tell them the truth so that they don't harm themselves, you know, further. And I think that people, even people of a sort of devout temperament, would sometimes like to see the abortion issue drop because so many people's lifestyles, this sort of, you know, I call it, you know, libertine atheistic lifestyle, even among people who reclaim Christianity. As that ethos has grown, nobody wants to talk about this abortion question, even though it's a central and fundamental and foundational one, because it just cuts too close to the contraceptive mentality. It cuts too close to, you know, this lifestyle libertinism. It cuts too close to the tenets of modern feminism. All things which, let's be honest, we have accepted as a default template for our culture. And so it would just be better if we could just be quiet about it and privately advise people not to do it, but not talk about it too much. And so I worry that that has become, you know, a kind of default inclination among even many Catholics who are, you know, very pro-life. And, I mean, they believe what the Church believes on this, so would prefer maybe if we didn't talk about it so much.
Now, Father DeVee, you as a pastor have to raise money every year to cover your church. Have you ever lost money because of your strong pro-life position?
You know, not that I'm aware of directly, but you know, you get indications, right? Some people just don't come anymore, and, you know, but I've never had anyone directly say they weren't giving. Matter of fact, you know, here's the funny thing, Deal. I'm sure I have, because other people have said, no, I'm not going to come to your church anymore. I'm not giving anymore because of something else you said or did. So it's kind of funny, you know, even those who that actually might have been the reason won't tell you as a priest face to face that's why they're quitting, because I think even they know, well, of course the priest would defend those things. You know, that's really not surprising, so I better come up with something else to say, because, you know, in a strange way, if I tell him that's the reason I'm quitting, I'm going to prove him right, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing anybody wants to do, right, is prove the parish priest right. So,
because as you know, I mean, lay people hypothesize as to why so many clergy never mentioned, or mentioned in passing.
Right. I do think that there can be that can be a real factor, and I do think that is why a lot of clergy maybe don't mention it. But you know, Dale, I got to tell you, I have a little more of a cynical view as to why a lot of clergy won't mention it. And that sometimes is, I think, I'm not sure the clergy are completely convinced of it
themselves.
You know, I'm not saying that they're pro-abortion or anything like that, but there's a softness, you know, on these deep moral theological questions that do cut close to contemporary convictions about lifestyle, about morality, about tenets that are very not in keeping with the gospel that we've accepted as the sort of cultural template. And I think that has had an impact on the belief, the strong belief of some clergy about these issues. I really do. And my experience in the priesthood tells me that is often the case.
I'm talking with Father Philip DeVue, pastor of St. Joseph Parish in Crescent Springs, Kentucky, about the present election and the points of view of the different, right now, vice presidential candidates, especially that of Catholic Tim Kaine. We'll be back right after this brief message.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, we are going to throw our hat in the ring of the presidential race and on the platform of the Eastern Lung of the Church provide real solutions for our nation.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
It's no secret. Jesus had it right. The world hates Christians. Dr. Ralph Martin's talk title at a recent conference was, "We're in a War."
God is revealing to us what's going on. It's not just human beings. It's the powers working through human beings to crush the life of Christ in the church on the earth, to drive us back into the ghetto, to keep us in our church buildings and not allow us to proclaim the name of Jesus publicly like we're still able to do, thanks be to God. Because of this spiritual war, you've got to kind of protect yourself. Today's an evil day, but more evil days are coming.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. At the 2012 Lift Jesus Higher rally in Toronto, Ralph Martin talked about our ongoing war with the culture and our society. Hear Dr. Martin on Putting On the Mind of Christ at Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
If you've enjoyed Father John Ricardo's gift of teaching and preaching in the past, his new book, Heaven Starts Now, is the book for you. In his inspiring and incisive way, Father John addresses the obstacles we all face in becoming mature disciples. How do we learn to forgive? How do we combat fear and understand suffering? How do we worship the Lord, love others, and surrender our lives to God? How do we become saints day by day? Order online at AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab.
I'm back with Father Philip DeVue, who is a pastor of St. Joseph Parish, just across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio, and Kentucky in Crescent Springs, Diocese of Covington. Been a priest over a dozen years and is a retreat master, gives retreats throughout the United States. If you want to find him, again, he's at St. Joseph Parish in Crescent Springs, Kentucky. Serves on the board of Sacred Heart Radio in Cincinnati. And he is become a friend over the years for a lot of reasons. He's a golfer. He likes fine wine. Most of all, he's really smart and articulate, and he defends the church, not just on the easy stuff, but on the difficult stuff. I remember, Father, if I may share, I gave a presentation once to a Catholic Charities group on a Catholic identity, and I drew on the board three concentric rings. and put identity over it. And on the outside, I put compassionate, loving, forgiving, blah, blah, blah. Middle ring, I put in subsidiarity, solidarity, human dignity, stuff like that. But on the middle ring, I put abortion, marriage, and so forth. I said, it's the folks who defend this ring who have Catholic identity. It's easy to espouse the other stuff, but when you defend this stuff, that's where your Catholic identity really is.
Well, and that's absolutely correct, because the rest of it is kind of meaningless without that, right?
Nobody's going to disagree with you.
Exactly right.
Nobody's going to say, well, loving is good, compassionate is good, right?
Right. Well, sometimes I shock people if they don't say, I am anti-compassionate. I shock them with that. I will just come out and say I'm against it, and then I will teasingly work my way back to the center that you so articulately described.
That's what a good teacher does. Congratulations.
But then I think sometimes they do actually think I am against compassion, right? But that's part of the, world turned upside down moral reasoning that afflicts our age too, isn't it? I mean, it's everywhere. That idea is everywhere. That that compassion has no core, or loving has no core other than a certain feeling about it. And then of course that's how nihilism gets its start. On the backs of compassion and words of compassion and loving, right? The church always has to speak about the content of those things, even if the content of those things contradict, the lifestyles of the present age.
Well, let's do a little history for a moment. In my recollection, there have been three vice presidential nominees who were Catholic and pro-abortion: Geraldine Ferraro, Joe Biden. No, there's been two and one presidential, John Kerry. We won't go back to Kennedy because I think it's hard to know in the context of 1960 just how that issue would have arisen. Now, given the presidential, Kerry actually got a lot of flack, but it wasn't very well publicized. He did get a lot of statements written publicly against him. Ferraro, of course, had that great, epic battle with Cardinal O'Connor.
Right, right.
Over that.
And I would say, if you may recall, too, Senator Kerry at the time, of course, did receive a lot of notices from bishops as he traveled about the continent campaign, warning him not to come to communion, which is something he has kind of forgotten in that 2004 campaign as well. I can think of, I don't know, five or six different dioceses that I recall of him being privately communicated to his campaign for him not to come to communion while he was in the diocese. So, that didn't get much press because that would have, upset the narrative of that particular campaign.
Now, has Joe Biden received other than a... I know Bishop Tobin said something about Joe Biden, but he's pretty much gotten a free pass completely. Is that because he's such a nice guy?
I mean,
he is a nice guy. He really is.
Yeah, no. I mean, actually, I've met Senator Biden a few times over the years. Years ago, when I was working in Washington, D.C., and other things I've been involved in, he's charming, he's funny, he's a, hail fellow, well met.
Yeah.
Politico. That's great. But as far as we've gotten a free pass on this, and he's another one who, very publicly trades on his Catholic faith as kind of the undergirding reality that forms all of his views on things, and yet totally hypocritical on especially the question of life, totally hypocritical.
By the way, there was a statement from the Bishop of Delaware. What city would that have been? Wilmington. Yes.
Yes, Wilmington, Delaware.
There was back in the when he was first elected, I think. Someone might want to check that. But I do think something was said. But still, it hasn't dogged him over the last 8 years.
But it hasn't, and it just seems to me that there has been a real flagging on the part of the bishop's zeal to tackle this issue, especially as it relates, to pro-abortion politicians.
I mean, he's complicit in Obama's extremism.
Oh well, I mean, not complicit. I mean, yes, he is complicit, but it's worse than that. I mean, he's been an enabler of it. He's
right.
been the architect of it legislatively, where that has mattered, because you know he knew how the Senate worked, and you know President Obama really didn't. He didn't spend that much time there. And so, you know, everywhere along the way where there have needed to be building blocks for Obama's abortion extremism in the policy realm, Senator Biden has made that, has translated that extremism and that extremist abortion agenda into policy and political reality. So it's not just sort of signing up and saying, yeah, I'm for that because I have to get along with my boss, the president. It's making it happen for him. And that's really the shocking thing. And you know, the thing we have to remember, Deal, is that these Catholic politicians who are publicly known as Catholic and then turn around and then trade on their Catholicism as a political asset while betraying the innocent unborn, it's not just that they're morally wrong and that they're jeopardizing their own salvation by this holding this morally depraved view. It's that they're corrupting the faith and morals of the other faithful. Because whenever they do it, and bishops don't correct them, and pastors don't correct them where they can and are able, what people see is, well, okay, he's sort of wrong, I guess, but it doesn't really matter that he holds that. Or better yet, well, the church is not really too interested in that much anymore, so it's okay. That corrupts faith and morals. I mean, in a tremendous way. And it leads to confusion within the life of the church. It leads to the disheartening of the faithful who are out there working for the pro-life cause. To protect the innocent born. And then, you know, I have to say, I mean, Senator Kaine engaged in a truly morally depraved act of alleged domain the other night, moral alleged domain, whenever he tried to substitute his opposition to the death penalty as some...
Oh, he did. He did.
He did. He tried to substitute that.
He did.
For his... You know, so I mean, I texted a friend right when I heard that message. Now, let me get this straight.
By the way, for our listeners, ledger domain means sleight of hand. Just so you know.
Oh yeah, sorry. I texted a friend and I said, now let me get this straight. You know, he is arguing for merciful justice for the guilty and hateful injustice for the innocent.
I know.
That's a depraved moral position.
He apologized for allowing convicted murderers to suffer the death penalty in Virginia. He just was so gushy about his apology.
Well, but then let me bear down on it a little bit for that, too. How depraved is that, too? So if you really believe the death penalty is the grave wrong that he says he does, okay. Well, then what? You were the governor. You know, you had real authority to not do it. You could have commuted every sentence there, and you could. I believe in a merciful justice. So how depraved is this man politically?
Well, he didn't do it because he wanted to be reelected.
Of course, he didn't do it.
Or that he knew he was going to be running for Senate.
Sure. Well, and I think we can argue that, you know, his actions show a consistent lack of character. No matter what he says, he believes or doesn't believe. So rather depraved. As I saw it, and but this idea, but you know, the idea that he latched on to this substitution that he tried to engage in, I notice is very common among Catholic politicians arguing against the death penalty. And you know what, Deal? I, for a lot of reasons, can sign up for being against the death penalty, even though our Catholic moral tradition allows it.
Yes,
I can sign up as a practical matter of public policy. For a lot of reasons, for saying, yeah, that's fine. Let's do away with the death penalty. There's too much involved in it. The state shouldn't have that kind of power over life and death. Fair enough. I can go along with that. I'm all for articulating as a practical matter of public policy a merciful standard of justice for the guilty. But then to turn around and then say, you know, I'm for it, but I'm going to enable and work with those who are working for the killing of the innocent unborn, that's a hateful injustice of the first order. And I notice this is a very popular move on a number of Catholic politicians who are pro-abortion. And it's morally illegitimate, it's depraved in the highest order, and it's a scandal. And that many people don't seem to pick up on what's gone on there is really unbelievable to me, because it's shocking, its depravity. Shocking, really.
How do you think he came across to the Catholics who are watching the debate?
I think it depends on which Catholics you're talking about. I think that practicing Catholics, for the most part, are not terribly impressed with, you know, his rather, you know, futile attempts to do what he did at the debate the other night. I think some of them would pick up on the depravity of what he was trying to do there, which I don't think he successfully did. Most Catholics I know that are regular churchgoers, actually, you know, I didn't watch the debate the day after because I was busy with, you know, parish business. And, but so I was talking to people that morning and such, and most Catholics that I know to be devout, you know, were like, well, we really wish Governor Pence was still Catholic because he did a great job on the pro-life thing, and the Catholics didn't do very good. Now, when I stepped out to a friend to have a cocktail the other night and, you know, solve the world's problems, I, of course, was there in my Roman collar, and, of course, you know, the largest group of Catholics in America, that of the Church of Non-Practicing Catholics, all were sharing with me, and I got in and I thought I did. Senator Kane did great. What a great to have the Catholic cocktail on the ticket. So I think it depends on which Catholics you're talking about. Those not involved in practicing the faith or with looser connections to the Church, you know, probably think that all sounded nice enough.
Do you think in any way that debate spurred Archbishop Aquila's very articulate piece that he published yesterday?
I, given that it was so articulate, I suspect that he's had it on his mind and probably on his computer for a while. you know, given that it was so, I thought the same thing. I thought that it probably did, because Governor Pence, who is former Catholic, but, you know, certainly solidly Christian, articulated our position, our conviction so well, and I'm sure the Archbishop, being the conscientious shepherd that he is, has been thinking seriously about these issues, as he is well known for, and I'm sure that that was an extra thumb on the scale to get that out.
Well, he's a smart enough guy, he could have sat down and written that in one sitting. You and I both know him.
That's likely true. It just could be just as true as well, but I have a feeling that Kane's rather galling moral depravity on this issue did indeed spur him along. Because it was, you know, I mean, Senator Kane wasn't even slick, really, in his attempts to do this. There are a few out there who do it a little better than he did it. And it was so ham-handed, especially in the light of Governor Pence's obvious human sincerity and conviction about it. It was cast in just the worst light imaginable. And, you know, let me say this. I realize I'm beating up on the senator quite a bit here, but it's because I love the senator and I want him to go to heaven. So I hope that his interactions with someone like Governor Pence, maybe with other people, I know my pro-life rosary group here in the parish is praying for him and other politicians. I hope he changes his heart on this. You know, I would hope that the wide panning he has received for that and other aspects of this performance would give the man some occasion to reflect on, okay, I'm trading on my Catholicism here, you know, maybe I need to look at what that really means. I hope his heart would change on these issues.
What would you say to his pastor down in Richmond if you ever met him?
I would ask him, have you ever done anything to engage and correct Senator Kane, whose soul is in jeopardy? Because of not only his personal conviction in this matter, but because of his corrupting of public faith and morals of others. I mean, that would be my first question. You know, are you concerned about his salvation enough to say something to him? You know, that would be what I would say, and then see where that is from there.
You want to speculate on what the answer would be?
I don't, only because I don't know the fella.
I'm purposely not mentioning his name because, you know, I'm not trying to stir up any problem. I'm just, obviously, the buck begins there. It begins in the parish, correct? And then it goes to the Bishop of Richmond from there, correct?
Right, who I believe said something.
Yeah, he did, right away. He made a good, strong statement on Kane. To his credit, he did.
Yes, I thought that was the case.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I realized, too, I mean, and to be fair to his parish priest and not knowing him and not knowing what's been or hasn't, you know, if you know somebody well personally, I mean, let's face it, sometimes it is harder to say something hard.
That's right. I think he's been going there for 30 years, you know, a long time.
But, you know, what's the purpose of having personal relationships if you can't say something that's important personally? Right.
I mean, you would beat me up if I got off track, wouldn't you?
I absolutely would. Absolutely.
Hey, I know you would, actually. I'm not laughing.
And it's because, too, you know, I mean, I love the people that I serve, and I want to see them go to heaven. That's why I was ordained, right? I want to help them get to heaven. I want to help them to know Christ. I want them to work with me to make Christ more well-known and more souls brought to the church. And so, you know, I love them enough to tell them that. And once again, I'm not going to sit here and say my courage is always perfect. It certainly hasn't. I understand how our courage can fail very often under the guise of prudence and very often under a spirit of gentleness, which you do want to have, you know, with the faithful entrusted to your pastoral care. But, you know, you have to tell them the truth because, too, I can never afford to risk my own salvation for you and I having pleasant relations, you know, because hell is a decidedly unpleasant place, and I don't want to go there. And, you know, my vocation requires me to teach these things to others, and if I don't do it, then I jeopardize my own salvation. You know, just a few days ago, our readings were from St. Gregory the Great and his pastoral rule. That guy is ruthless on us priests. Ruthless. About the shepherd that does not shepherd his people, about the sheepdog that does not protect the sheep from the wolves. And, you know, the first wolf we all have to confront is the one within us, right? Our own weakness, our maybe cowardice. And so we have to do what Christ commissioned us to do, and that's to teach, sanctify, and govern.
And how are things going in your own parish on the electoral issue? I'm sure you've had discussions, and I'm sure you've made it very clear what the church teaches.
Yes, you know, literally I've preached, you know, many times and in many different ways on a daily basis, you know, on the pro-life issue and its primacy. I literally have had one person say something, you know, not too nice to me.
Really? Just one?
What? Just one person. One person. And, you know, my response to that person was, well, you know, hey, first of all, nothing I say keeps you from voting how you think you ought to, okay? So, no one's keeping you from voting who you think. But this is what the church teaches. This is what Christ demands us to think about when going into that ballot box as we exercise our duty to faithful citizenship. Now, you can do with that what you will. It's on you. But it was on me to tell you what I did.
Have you ever read Forming Consciences for Faithful Citizenship?
Yes. I've not read it again this year, but I've read it many times.
Yeah, this is the statement from 2008. It was very badly revised, in my opinion, and the wording gives people outs, I mean, four different outs that I've found in that document. Do you have any reservations about it?
Yeah, well, I never reference it whenever I preach on the subject. I haven't referenced it since it came out, not once, not ever. I've always referenced other things like materials that come from Priests for Life or the Catechism itself or Evangelium Vitae.
Right.
You can't go wrong with those things, and even when somebody...
The Catechism! I mean, come on!
Yeah, you know.
Right.
So I reference those things, and then and anytime somebody gets nasty with me, I have those things from, you know, St. John Paul II, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, you know, and Father Pavone does the same thing, right?
And of course,
those same sources. So, you know,
and he, you know, he has a remarkable, you know, I've worked with him quite a bit, known him a long time. He has a remarkable joy and way of staying cool in the midst of all this. It's really
absolutely
something to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, he has a real charism in that regard.
He's never flustered. Never flustered.
Never. No, never. And
he would make a good golfer if he ever got around to it.
Well, you know, he's, you know, Deal, Father Pavone, I'm going to go on the limb here, might be more holy than you and I are.
Safe bet for me, I know.
he doesn't have time for these worldly distractions that you and I enjoy so much.
Well, I'm the only guy who ever saw the songs that are on his iPhone, what's in his, you know, music app.
Oh, sure.
And he loves this music from the late 50s and early 60s. Frankie Avalon, you know, Paula Anka. I mean, he loves that stuff, and I do too, because that's what I grew up. So he has some entertainment, and he has some relaxation
yeah,
in his life.
Only
early Beatles, not late.
Only, I mean, as you and I know, though, when it comes to golf, we're always, golfers are always on the edge of worshiping the false god as we engage.
Yes, we are. Ourselves.
So, you know.
Yes. You know, I'll tell you, let's have one more moment with Tim Kaine.
Okay.
Do you think that the pommeling that he's taking, he may not be too aware of all the pommeling, but he is taking a pommeling. Do you think it's going to make him have doubts about where he stands?
No, I don't, actually. I mean, what I have seen over the years, you know, D.L., working in the public square on these issues, is that, and I mean this in all seriousness, the power of false gods underwritten by the power of the demonic. And, you know, all political analysis aside or whatever, it does seem to me that, you know, those who have went over, you know, to the pro-abortion side, who regularly enable it, there is a real false god in that. And that false god might go into many names, but the power of the demonic underwriting the darkness that keeps, you know, otherwise intelligent people from seeing the obvious moral depravity of any way killing the innocent preborn is something that I've almost never seen a public official who has, once they've adopted it, come back from.
Well, Papa Bush did. Papa Bush, you know, our mutual late friend, John Wilkie, Dr. John Wilkie, went up and sat with him in his summer home up in Maine and laid everything out on the table, and right then and there, he changed his mind.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's a great story. I didn't know the.
But that's the only time. That's the only one that I'm aware of.
And you know, so I think one of the things we as Christians have to remember is that, you know, this issue over abortion and the killing of innocent preborn primarily is not a political issue. It has tremendous manifestations in the political order, but it is a great spiritual battle because it is a great darkness coming in over our civilization. That a nation whose founding documents have this tremendous insight into, you know, life being the first of our inalienable rights is now utterly in question.
Exactly what the Bishop Pastoral Letter of 1998, Living the Gospel of Life, says.
Exactly.
Ties this all to our own founding.
Right. And so we have to be mindful that as we engage in the public square and deal with the political realities that affect the issue of abortion, we as Christians have to make sure that, you know, our most fundamental pro-life battle is going on in our own soul, that we're praying and fasting, that this great darkness that threatens the life of the innocent preborn would be taken away from our republic, would be done away with, and that the power of the demonic, which underwrites people worshiping this false god that leads to the killing of the innocent preborn, would be banished, you know, by the power and name of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so it's always both and, you know, not either or when it comes to these political battles. We have to look beyond the specific to see the even more specific, which is this great spiritual battle that's going on for the hearts and minds, you know, of people all across really the world, because the world watches what we do here, you know. And I think we can never forget that very fundamental truth. You know, on deal on Friday, I made it a commitment about 6 months ago that in a very specific way, I would pray and fast on Fridays for two specific contentions. The Christians being persecuted in the Middle East and the innocent preborn being persecuted and murdered in our country. And I have a series of prayers and sacrifice offer each Friday for those intentions. And I would advise all of our listeners to do something like that for themselves, to make that commitment themselves. Because even as we engage in the political, what underwrites it all is this great spiritual battles with the spiritual host of wickedness that are out there that, you know, have corrupted our public life on this issue in this pretty significant way, I think.
Father Philip DeVue, St. Joseph's Parish in northern Kentucky, just across from Cincinnati in the town of Crescent Springs. Thanks so much for being a guest here on Church and Country. And I got to get up to see you sometime and go to your church and hear you preach. I'm sure a lot of other people feel that way.
Well, we'd love to have you. And, you know, believe it or not, the Bluegrass State has many fine places to golf. So
okay, well, it's a date.
We could
date.
Secular.
Okay. Oh, Father, again, Father DeVue, thanks for being a guest on Church and Culture once again during this perilous time. And we appreciate your recommendation of prayer, and especially on Fridays for these special intentions. To all of you who are listening, same time, same day, next week, we'll be back.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
Time to help a child in Pontiac improve their learning and academic skills? Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan needs volunteer tutors to work with children from Hispanic families from 1st to 5th grade. And you don't need a background in Spanish. The children speak English but need help with their homework. If you are free afternoons from 3 to 5, you can be a tutor. Learn more, call 248-338-4250, extension 3719, or email info@ccsem.org.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
I want to talk today about foreigners. I'm one of them, so thank you for your welcome. Not everyone can do this. Politicians debate how to reform immigration. Some would like to stop it altogether. People have many different ideas about how to treat foreigners. The scriptures help us turn towards the forgotten, the homeless, and the outcast. Consider the Samaritan leper. All lepers were rejected, but he would have been despised even more. Who are those people we treat as subhuman? As Christians, we're called to serve one another. That's a basic commandment. We're called to serve all people as Jesus did, whether they're documented or not, foreign or local. We're called to love them and serve them. Especially what the scriptures call the Anawim, the poor and the stranger in our midst. And we're called to be people of forgiveness, who have no need for documents before we offer help. The gospel is radical and calls us to be radical. Foreigners challenge us to move beyond ourselves and to think as Jesus thinks. They challenge us to put on the mind of Christ. Who is the stranger among us? Who is the foreigner? Once we locate this person, we'll have to act differently. They'll place demands upon us and call us to be Christ-like. They'll upset our neat schedules and our consciences. They require our attention and, more than that, our love. Foreigners lead us out of ourselves and our selfishness. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the reading read this Sunday at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. In the 4th century, catechumens at the Easter Vigil would process through their First Communion chanting Psalm 23. It turns out Psalm 23 is actually a catechesis of the gateway sacraments of baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist. He leads me beside still waters. We emerge from the still waters of baptism as new creations. You prepare a table before me. Once we are baptized into the church, the Lord lays out the banquet of the Eucharist to nourish us. And you anoint my head with oil. In confirmation, our heads are anointed with oil, and we are forever sealed and identified with the cross of Jesus. And finally, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The gateway sacraments we have received encourage us all the days of our lives to follow the path of holiness towards our Father's house.
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. The Feast of St. Gerard Majella is approaching.